Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast. The RTC features only the best OTR on our live stream, where we also invite you to tune in and enjoy the Radio Book Channel and the RTC Music Channel, all found at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Well, thanks for joining us on another edition of the Radio Theater Channel's weekly download, and this time it's all about drama. We'll start off with an episode of the Columbia Workshop, all the way back to 1939, and a program called Now It's Summer.
9 o'clock, the correct time. WJSV, Washington. Does Hollywood have a heart? The answer to that question will be broadcast over the Columbia Broadcasting System every Sunday night at 7:30 o'clock on the Screen Gill Theater. This program returns to the air September 24th. The greatest of Hollywood stars broadcast, but they receive no pay for their work. Instead, the money, $10,000 each week, goes into the fund to build a home for the screen industry's needy. Be sure to tune in every Sunday night.
Tonight, the Columbia Workshop presents the fifth specially commissioned work for the current workshop festival, Now It's Summer, a comedy by the young American author and playwright Arthur Kober. Earl McGill is the director. Is a high school classroom in elementary physics. Charles Crowe has taught physics for over 20 years, and what he says, he has said again and again.
Now, I want the class to observe that I've just made a parallel connection with these two bulbs. Now, watch closely. By unscrewing this one bulb, so, I put the light out. Now, does that affect the power of this other bulb? Yes, Corey, your hand was up first.
No, it doesn't.
Doesn't what?
Doesn't affect the power of that there other bulb.
Exactly. It does not affect the power of the other bulb. Now I want the class to notice the bulbs on the other base. These bulbs are connected in series. Now observe, please, that when... Sweeney?
Yes, sir.
What are you doing, Sweeney?
Nothing.
Exactly. Quiet. Quiet, please. Sweeney, you're to give me your full and undivided attention. You understand? Do you understand, young man?
Yeah.
Yes, what?
Yes, sir.
That's better. Now, as I was saying, observe the effect as I turn this light out. The other light also goes out. Now, put that down in your books, please. How to tell whether devices are connected in series or in parallel. The test is to turn out one bulb. If all go out, they are connected in series. If one goes out, what's the answer, Sweeney?
The answer?
Very sorry to have to disturb your slumbers. Phillips, you give our sleepy friend the answer.
If one goes out, they're connected in parallel.
Exactly. Now, Sweeney, I want you to read what I've just asked you to put in your notebook.
Huh?
Huh is not what I asked you to write. Quiet. Quiet. Please, boys, quiet. Sweeney, I shall have to ask you to stay in after the rest of the class is dismissed. Minelli?
Yes, sir?
I want you to make tomorrow's homework on the board. Page 630, problems 3, 11, 12, and 14. I don't think that's at all funny, Sweeney.
Oh, gee whiz. Now a guy doesn't sneeze no more.
None of your impertinence. I won't tolerate it.
Stop. You will retain your seats, please. The signal is meant for me, not for you.
You're all to read the pages on energy and be prepared to define the various types of energy. Now, have you all got that?
Yes, sir.
Well, we'll find out tomorrow whether you have or not. All right, class dismissed. Sweeney, I want you to come forward, please.
Ah, gee whiz, I didn't do that.
You will do as I say. Yes, what is it, Corin?
Are we supposed to do that stuff about power?
Your homework covers that question.
Thanks, Benedict.
Yes, Benedict?
You said I should ask you when I could use the Bunsen burner, Mr. Crow.
Will you stop that noise, please? I'm sorry, Benedict. Not today. Some other time. Corey forgot his textbooks. Will you see that he gets them?
Yes, sir.
Right. Now, Sweeney.
Gee whiz, Mr. Trow, I'm supposed to see Mr. Considine after school. He'll give me holy heck if I don't see him.
Here's a sheet of paper. Make out a note to Mr. Considine saying I detained you, and I'll sign it.
Gee whiz, what did I do anyways? I was just sitting there. I wasn't hurting nobody.
Hurting nobody?
No, sir. I wasn't hurting nobody.
Hurting nobody?
Hurting anybody.
Better.
Ah, gee whiz, why are you always picking on me? What you got against me, anyhow?
Every time I'm in the midst of an experiment or the explanation of some rule, you're either whispering to your neighbor or you're off stargazing somewhere. Now, I can't have discipline in my class if you're going to set a bad example, can I?
But I wasn't whispering, Mr. Trow. Today I was doing nothing.
That's it, Sweeney. You were doing nothing when you were supposed to be listening.
I was listening.
Don't contradict me. You were daydreaming. You had your eyes closed.
That's the way I listen sometimes. No kidding, I
Sweeney,
really...
Sweeney, this has happened too often to be an accident. I'm afraid I shall have to report you to Dr. Curtis. You wouldn't want me to do that, would you?
No, sir.
Well, what's your average mark, Sweeney?
About 70.
70? Do any of your other teachers find fault with you?
No, sir. Nobody else picks on me. You're the only...
Why does Mr. Considine want to see you?
He's coaching the baseball team. I'm supposed to be in the park right now.
Keep your seat, please, please. I'm not letting you go until we get to the bottom of this. Now, what is it, Sweeney? Come on, out with it.
Well, I don't know.
Well, there's no need to be embarrassed. This is just between you and me. Now, speak up.
I got nothing to speak up.
Are my problems too complex?
Huh?
I mean, are they too hard?
They're okay, I guess.
Well, no. Perhaps I don't make myself clear. Perhaps if I expressed myself a little more, shall we say, more simply, you'd understand. Now, is that it?
Well, I don't know.
Sweeney, you must know what's bothering you.
I got nothing bothering me.
Last week, it was Turner I had to report. The week before, it was Hellman. Now, I don't want to go to Dr. Curtis again. Sweeney, there's an old adage. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Now, you've often heard of that, haven't you?
I don't know.
Of course you have. Everybody has. Now, there is something obviously wrong with you. I'd like to help you, but that requires your cooperation. In other words, let us say that I'm the doctor and you are the patient, so to speak. Now, in order to effect it... There you go again.
What did I do now?
Even when I try to help you, you won't listen. You were staring out of the window wearing that... sickish grin on your face. Sweeney, I don't know what to do.
I was listening, Mr. Trow. You said you was a doctor.
Your constant wool gathering is becoming a source of extreme irritation. You're really not a bad boy. If only you wouldn't allow your mind to wander off the way it does.
No, sir, no more. Gee, I hope Mr. Constant...
Now, one moment, please, please. I'm not quite through with you.
Gee.
Now, stop your sulking. I assure you, it's no fun for me to stay here after school. But I must do something about you, if only as an example to the other unruly pupils. You don't like physics, do you? Isn't that why you're so restless? Go on, you can tell me. I won't punish you.
Oh, who wants to be an electrician anyhow? What do I care about that electric light and power stuff?
Well, what would you rather do?
Play baseball with the rest of the guys. That's what I was thinking when I was looking out of the window. I was thinking, gee whiz, now it's summer. Look at me, cooped up here while the gang is in the park having fun. I was thinking, boy, it must be nice out there in the park. It's summer now.
But, Sweeney, we can't go about doing whatever we like. It would be a very strange world if we did. There are certain things which have to be done whether we like to do them or not. They make for routine and order. Now, if we were to neglect these duties, we'd have chaos and confusion. There are certain tasks that I have to perform whether I want to or not. I, too, would like to be out in the fresh air. There's also a park a few blocks from the boarding house in which I live. I haven't been there in... Oh, let me see now. Never mind. The fact is that I frequently hear some of my neighbors arranging to go there. There are times when I'm tempted to go along. But do I leave my work? Do I take time off? Do I neglect my duties? The answer, Sweeney, is emphatically no, I do not. Even though it is summer and there is a park nearby. Routine and order, Sweeney, are the great secret of life. Now, learn the simple art of self-discipline. For example, make a point of arriving at your classes promptly. Devote all your thought and energy to the subject in hand. Then, when your classes are over, you can relax. Play your baseball in the park. Have your good time. Happy in the knowledge that you've done your... Sweeney, I give up. You're incorrigible.
Well, what's the matter? What did I do now?
Come along. I'll take you to Dr. Curtis. Perhaps he can drill some sense into you.
Gee whiz, I'm always doing something wrong. Even when I sit nice and quiet, that's wrong.
Nothing I say seems to penetrate. Everything goes into one ear and out the very same ear.
Honest, Mr. Trow, I was paying attention.
You were busy scribbling away while I was talking. Sweeney, does anything ever stir in that cranium of yours?
Yes, sir.
Really? How surprising. What were you writing?
It's nothing.
Let me see it.
It's just a plain piece of paper, that's all.
Come on, let me have it. I'm curious to see what you think of, if you think at all, while I'm talking. Well?
It's just some scribbling, Mr. Trow. It ain't got no sense to it.
No, I don't doubt that for a moment. I'm waiting, Sweeney.
Oh, gee.
Open your fist, please. Now, let me see what... What made you write this?
I don't know.
Old Donald Duck. Mr. Trow, Old Donald Duck. Old Donald Duck?
I didn't make it up, Mr. Trow. Honest, I didn't. The rest of the fellas, they all
you
got
you mean
to...
that the other pupils also call me this? Do they, Sweeney? I want to know so I can be, prepared, so to speak. Do they?
It's kind of like a nickname. You know, like Red and Shorty and...
Old Donald Duck. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Why do they call me that? Please, tell me. I won't punish you. I promise you I won't.
Well, every time you talk, you always go like this. Now then, quack, 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 so to speak. Exactly. Quack, quack, quack,
that's
quack,
enough.
Quack.
I don't want to hear any more.
Oh, I didn't want to tell you, Mr. Trow, but you asked me. You said you wouldn't...
Yes, I know. All right, Sweeney. I asked you and you told me.
That's what I was scribbling. I was thinking, gee whiz, now it's summer. There's the park, and I'm cooped up while old Donald Ducky keeps right on quacking. Quack, quack, quack,
I've
quack, quack.
I've had enough of that. Get out of here. Get out at once before I...
Yes, sir. Gee whiz, all I did was tell you what you asked me.
Stop! Old Donald Duck. Mr. Trow, you are old Donald Duck. Quack, 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 so to speak. Exactly. Quack, quack, quack.
Summer. There's the park, and I'm cooped up while old Donald Ducky keeps right on quacking. Quack, 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 quack. Gee whiz. Now it's summer. The gang is in the park having fun. I was thinking, boy, it must be nice out there in the park. It's summer now.
And here's a park only a few blocks from the boarding house where I live. Oh, I haven't been here in... Well, let me see now. Heavens, must be years. I don't remember this part of the park at all. Why, that playground there must be new. And look at those children. Dear me, so many of them. Climbing up that ladder and sliding down and climbing up and... Well... Dear me, if only they'd apply themselves to their lessons that way. My, this is a large park. I'd forgotten how large it really is.
Oh!
Heaven's
sakes, mister, why don't you look where you're going?
I beg your pardon. I was so abstracted.
Almost got the baby carriage
over. I'm sorry.
Yes, you are right, my sweet baby. Did a man hurt my pretty widow soldier boy? Oh,
you witty rascal, you. Ah, my baby wants his toy. Where's that toy?
Oh, this must be. It's on the ground. Here, let me get it.
Thank you. Here you are, my sweetie baby. Here's your Donald Duck.
I wonder where I am. This park is so big, I just can't find my way about. I must have walked a great deal. I think I'll sit down and rest a while. I really ought to be getting home, of course. There are classroom papers to do. Routine. Routine and order. Yeah. Tired, though. Oh, dear, all these benches are taken. Oh, there's a place near that door over there. I beg your pardon.
Hey, I'm putting down my newspaper.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you reserving this place?
Reserving the... What do you think this park is, a theater or something?
Would you mind if I sat here?
Well, why should I mind? I don't own this joint.
Ah, at last I can sit down and rest. That feels nice. I wonder if this young lady on my right reading the newspaper, I wonder if she's resting, too. Oh, what have we here on my left? Oh, the young man. Is he resting? Oh, well, there seems to be someone sitting with him.
Say, Kitty, you sure you're comfy now?
Uh-huh. Only put down your arm, just a little bit.
Okay, Cleopatra, queen of the Nile. Your humble slave stretch, your base the noble queen. Say, you want to know something, Kitty?
What?
It's too bad you can't see your eyes right now. Boy, some set of peepers, wow.
What's the matter with them?
Nothing's the matter with them. They're 100% perfect, your eyes.
Gee, it's the wonder you can see them. The light here, it's so bad.
Go on, Kitty. Take them out so I can examine them.
Crazy. You know, Stretch, a friend of mine, Shirley's her name, she recommends I should use mascara. What do you think?
I think your friend Shirley ought to have her head examined. She must be touched. Mascara. What do you want to spoil such beautiful set of brown eyes for?
They're not brown, you see? You don't even know the color. They're hazel.
Who says?
Well, look, bend down. See? Hazel.
Hazel, huh? You mean like a nut? Gee, you sweet thing.
Oh, Stretch.
Now it's summer. They're all in the park having fun. I was thinking, boy, it must be nice out there in the park. It's summer now.
Well?
Well, what?
Well, I guess they're brown all right.
I ought to be home, arranging my work. Dear me, I'm way behind now on my duties. My, there really will be chaos and confusion. The secret of life, Sweeney, is routine and order. Routine and order, yes. Look at these two, Kitty and Stretch. They seem to know the secret of life. They're not cooped in. They're out here in the park. They both know it's summer.
Looks like we've got an audience. The old guy's watching us.
Next time, maybe we'd better sell tickets.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just put...
Give me my bag, Stretch.
Yeah, come on, Kitty, before his eyes start popping out.
No, please.
Hey, too bad you didn't bring your candid camera with you.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't. You know, I didn't mean to drive them away, really. I didn't.
Don't let it bother you, Pop.
You know, I couldn't help listening.
You'd get gray hair if you worried.
I thought they were both... Very sweet.
Yeah,
and then,
sweet.
Yes, and then so young. I'm really sorry I frightened them away.
Look, Pop. I wouldn't worry none about those birds if I was you. You get used to things like that around here if you just hang around for an hour or so.
Oh, you seem to know this park.
Know it? I memorized it. Mention any leaf, I'll tell you where it is. What else I gotta do? Sit in my 2x4 and get a nice steam bath when I can sit out here in the open. Look at it. Trees and flowers and lots of nice green grass. I like green for a color.
This is here and has been all these years.
What I'd be doing at home right now is sitting and staring at the walls. And if thinking, what good am I? Where do I come in anyways? Well, in the park, I don't know. People go past you, some happy, some sad. You start wondering about them. Maybe they got their troubles. Maybe they ain't even got a 2x4 with walls to stare at. Then I don't feel so bad. Now, why should somebody else's troubles pep me up? I don't know why. Still, it does.
Old Nanny Duck, huh? Mr. Trout. Quack, quack, quack.
Yeah?
Quack.
The man who invented parks ought to get a medal. Don't you think so?
Hmm? Oh, why, I beg your pardon?
I was talking about the park.
Oh. would you believe it? This is my first visit here in, well, in almost 20 years.
Oh, from out of town, huh?
No, I live only a short distance away. Matter of fact, I moved there so as to be near the park.
You mean you live on... Say, you saw at the place, or what?
No, I've taken it for granted, I guess. You know, like the way you take your neighbors and people around you. Now, when I first moved in, I was in this park almost every day. There was a funny little path, yes, I remember now. I was back in the boathouse. I used to walk along it every day, dreaming and planning. There was so much to plan and to dream about as I walked through the park 20 years ago.
Funny, but I was running around the park in those days, too.
You? You must have been a baby.
No, I was 4 years old. Now, why should I lie? I was 6 years old. Have you ever been in Harden, Minnesota?
I've never been out of this state.
I come from Harden, Minnesota. Every Sunday morning, my old lady, she had a romantic nature. She dragged me and the whole family to the Harden Park to look at the scenery. Me, my brothers and sisters, all seven of us.
Seven?
Yeah, seven.
Oh, what about your father?
Well, he was a janitor. He had to stay home and tend the house. But the rest of us, every Sunday we was marching through the park. The parade of the Poniatowskis.
The...
Yeah, Poniatowskis. That's a Polish name.
Poniatowski.
Yeah, I'd spell it for you, but what good would it do?
Oh, it's an odd name, isn't it?
Odd? You want to hear my full name? Get ready now. May Allison Poniatowski. How do you like a hand like that? May Allison.
It doesn't sound very Polish.
Yeah, just my old lady's romantic nature popping out again. You see, while Pop was cleaning up in the yard and tending to the garbage, the old lady was always off seeing movies. She was simply nuts about movies, especially about her idol, Harold Lockwood. Remember him?
I'm afraid I don't.
Well, the old lady was his fan. The family lived in a dive. This was before I was born. And it was full of two things, mice and Harold Lockwood's pictures. Both all over the place.
Oh, I don't think I'd like that.
Oh, they didn't mind. They was counting on me being a boy. Mom thought if she could see a lot of pictures, maybe I'd be born looking like Harold Lockwood. What do you call that thing? Pre-something?
Prenatal influence.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, having a girl must have been a great disappointment.
Yeah, not with the old lady's romantic nature. What the devil, she figured, so long as I can't be like Harold Lockwood, I might as well be like the dame he played opposite. May Allison, her name.
Oh, I begin to see.
Yeah, with a handle like that, she figured, maybe someday I'd meet a fella like Lockwood. And I don't know. I've been around, I've met a lot of guys, and if any of them was like Mom's Lockwood, all I gotta say is Harold Lockwood was no bargain.
Is your mother still fond of the movies?
Nah, to tell you the truth, I ain't seen her in years. The minute my older brother got a job, she up and runs away with her boarder, a fat little greaseball with a walrus mustache. But with Mom's romantic nature, maybe he did look like Harold Lockwood at that. Say, must be a kind of late, huh?
Oh, I wonder what time it is.
You've got a match?
Oh.
Well, the correct time is 13 minutes to 10, courtesy Century Easy Credit Plan.
Oh. Is it really that late? Dear me,
Well, thanks for sitting here and let me chew your ear off.
Oh, I enjoyed it very much.
I don't get a chance to do much gabbing around here. The dames, they don't seem to like my line of talk. And the fellas, they don't want to talk. They got one motto, action speaks louder than words. So, there you are.
Well, I'll say good night. I hope that we'll meet again.
Oh, sure. Anytime you're in the neighborhood, just drop in. Guess, I ought to be getting back, too. Yeah. Go back to what?
Yes, and go back to what?
Well, look, I got nothing but a 2x4 dump to go to, but you.
I? What have I? A boarding house to go to. Mrs. Bell, the landlady, is probably very worried about me. I've never been out this late before. But I'll be home soon. I'll be home, filling the air with chalk dust and classroom smells and my usual complaints, how some horrid little monster annoyed me and how I had to deal firmly with a rascal.
You're a school teacher, huh?
Yes, that's right.
Oh, gee. Oh, excuse me.
What for?
For talking so dopey, calling you Pop. Gee, I should have known right away from the way you talked, so refined like. Gee, ain't I the sap, though? If you'd only tell me what you was...
Well, why? What difference does it make?
A school teacher? Why, you must be awful smart, awful brainy, what I mean. Think of it, hundreds and hundreds of kids, and you learning them things, telling... Oh, what do you teach?
Physics.
Physics? It's a new one on me, physics. Sounds kind of funny.
Oh, it isn't funny. On the contrary, it's quite serious.
Well, what is it? I mean, arithmetic, that's figures. Geography, that's about foreign countries.
Well, it's quite an involved subject. Physics is the study of... Well, you don't really want to know, do you?
Oh, sure I do. But it's going to take time, then forget it.
Well, physics is the science which treats of energy and matter and their relation to each other.
Oh, I see.
Do you?
What?
Do you see?
honestly, I don't. What's it all about?
Well, roughly, it's about mechanics. Heat, magnetism, light, electricity.
It's still Greek to me.
To my pupils, too, I found out. The only thing that keeps them from falling asleep is the classroom bell.
Look, tell me something. With so much knowledge in the world to pick on, how come you grab such a broken-down thing like that physics?
Well, I felt that it had a fundamental relationship to life. Heat, light, mechanics, we couldn't exist without them. But perhaps there are more important things. Yes. Sweeney proved that to me some hours ago.
Sweeney?
Today's particular monster. No, it's summer, he said. Who wants to be cooped up in a room, he said, when you can be out there in the park having fun? No, he was right. He was right. That Calliope sounds so gay and summery.
That's Pleasure Palace.
Pleasure Palace?
Yeah.
Oh. Hey, I wonder if you would, never mind.
What?
No, it's too silly.
I'll tell you, if it's silly, what is it?
Well, you know, I'd like to go there. I'd like to go there now. Will you come with me?
Hey, well, wait a minute. Am I hearing right? You do mean Pleasure Palace, don't you? Hey, look, you're too big a boy to go running away from school.
Yes, I knew it was too silly.
Gee, he really means it. So you know what this is, don't you? A pickup.
Hmm?
Well, not that I ain't been picked up before. Where's my bag?
Do you go?
What do I got to lose?
Well, we won't stay very long.
Yeah, so I can get my beauty sleep and be fresh in the morning to go looking for jobs. Don't worry, those jobs still won't be there, whether I'm fresh like a daisy or not. You gonna shoot the works?
The works?
I mean, will we go on the merry-go-round?
Oh, on the Ferris wheel, too, if you like.
And can we try the whip?
Uh-huh, and the barrel of fun.
Don't forget the tunnel of love.
And we'll eat popcorn and apple on the stick.
Yeah, how's about hot dogs and ice cream?
Why, of course, and we'll drink soda pop and lemonade.
Can you make mine a root beer?
You'll have that, too.
Come on, I'm getting indigestion just thinking about it.
Be nice out there in that park. Why, now it's summer.
You've been listening to the CBS presentation of Now It's Summer, a comedy specially commissioned for the Columbia Workshop Festival by Arthur Kober. Earl McGill directed tonight's performance, and Bernard Herrmann conducted the musical score. The part of Charles Trow was played by Carl Swenson. May Allison Poniatowski by Ann Shepherd, and Sweeney by Jimmy Donnelly. We call your special attention to next week's Columbia Workshop, which will be the final broadcast in the current festival series. It is a revival of the now famous Fall of the City by Archibald MacLeish. It will be produced in Hollywood under the direction of Irving Reese. Burgess Meredith will play the leading role. This program will originate from the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum with a cast of over 500 people to make it one of the most outstanding broadcasts of the year. The time, of course, is 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You may be interested to know that The Fall of the City is one of the dramas that is contained in the book Columbia Workshop Plays, published by Whittlesey House and now available at your local bookstore. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From September 21 of 1939, that's Now It's Summer from the Columbia Workshop. And you may have heard in the opening the WJSV announcement, and that's unique because that's the complete broadcast day recorded from the very start of the day to the end of the day, and it's all there for history. The WJSV recordings, and if you ever get a chance to listen to those, you should. Maybe at some point we'll put them on here, but of course it would take quite a few podcasts to do it. But we'll give it a consideration. Next up, we're going to do the Hollywood Star Playhouse. This is called The Tenth Planet, and it's from September 7th of 1952.
This is Joseph Cotton inviting you to listen now to Hollywood Star Playhouse, brought to you by the Bakers of America.
Hollywood Star Playhouse, 30 minutes of mystery, thrills, drama, by Hollywood's finest writers featuring Hollywood's top stars. Brought to you by the Bakers of America through the cooperation of your baker. Hello there, this is Wendell Niles. In a moment, we'll bring you Act One of today's transcribed story, The Tenth Planet, starring Mr. Joseph Cotton. Did you know that 40 to 50 years ago, most of our women baked their bread at home? That's right. But today, fine, fresh bread is readily available every shopping day. But this has been made possible only because of the development of large-scale methods of baking, because of hundreds of baking plants throughout the nation, and because of fast, modern means of bread distribution. So, 95% of the 40 million loaves of bread we Americans eat every day is supplied by our bakers. And in addition to bread, who but our bakers could turn out such a varied assortment of delicious bakery foods? Yes, for variety, convenience, economy, for nutritious, good eating, you can depend on the Bakers of America to help you serve better meals through bakery foods. And now, Act One of The Tenth Planet, starring Mr. Joseph Cotton.
Only a matter of time. They know our weakness and they know our strength, and they will conquer and rule the earth. It is only a matter of time. The time it takes to reach Earth from the tenth planet. My name is Walker. My home is in California, North American continent, planet Earth. I'm writing this in a room deep inside a spaceship approximately 4.5 million miles from Earth. On Earth, I was a teacher of mathematics. Among the others seated about me are a doctor, an accountant, a judge, an actor, a machinist, a farmer. The list is a long one. There are men of various nationalities who, one by one, disappeared off the face of the Earth. There are men who are being taken to the 10th planet. My life, for the most part, has been average, unexciting. On Earth, I attended church, discussed politics, gave my son boxing lessons, and on Saturday nights, my wife and I usually had a few friends in for bridge. These things are important, not only that you may know more about me, but that I may carefully report and you may evaluate everything that has happened since the afternoon I walked into my home and found a visitor awaiting me, a visitor from the Bureau in Washington. Hi, darling. Oh.
Todd, this is Mr. Webster. He's with the Bureau.
How do you do, Mr. Walker?
He's a G-man, Pop. A real honest...
Bobby.
Yes, Bobby. I suppose you and Mummy...
Yes, I'll keep him occupied, dear. Come on, Bobby.
We'll drive down to the market.
Sit down, Mr. Webster.
Thank you. Here are my credentials, Mr. Walker.
Mm-hmm. Just what do you want to see me about?
How long has it been since you've seen your brother, Mr. Walker?
Oh, Harry? Oh, I haven't seen him since he went to work at the Atomic Center over in New Mexico.
You talked to him recently? On the phone, I mean?
No. Why do you...
Letters from him?
Well, he usually writes about once a week, but I haven't had a letter now in, I guess it's been close to 3 weeks.
Now, what did he write then?
Oh, just the usual things. Working hard, feeling fine. Usual things a brother writes.
No mention of his work?
No. He's never written about his work. It's highly secret, I believe.
Yeah. Mr. Walker, you and your brother have always been very close, haven't you?
Yes, ever since our father died.
And he hasn't contacted you in any way during the past 2 weeks.
That's right.
Well, I guess that checks you out, Mr. Walker. Sorry to have bothered you.
Mr. Webster.
Yeah?
What's happened to Harry?
I'm sorry, Mr. Walker. My orders were to contact you, find out when you heard from him last. That's all I know.
He's dead.
Dead? Why do you say that?
If he weren't, I'd have heard from him.
Well, you can't be sure of that now. He may have been transferred. His work is classified. There could be any number of reasons.
No. When Harry took the job, we prepared for that. We have a code.
A code?
We agreed that if he should suddenly be sent somewhere unexpectedly, or if he weren't free to let me know where he is or what he's doing, he'd send me a wire saying, "Happy birthday, Pappy."
Mm-hmm. Pappy?
Well, he's called me that since Dad died.
I see. Well, now, let's not look on the black side, Mr. Walker. You may hear from him any day.
Can you give me any other information about him?
I'm sorry. I'm just doing a job.
So was he. Webster was barely out of the house when I was on the phone. After an hour and 20 minutes or so of red tape, I reached a security officer at the Atomic Center in New Mexico.
Security, Major Collins speaking.
Major, I'm the brother of Harry Walker.
Are you calling from New York, Mr. Walker?
I'm calling from my home in California. What difference does that make?
Well, if you give me your number, I'll call you back.
I realize the necessity of a caution, but I don't understand why you people won't tell me what's happened to Harry.
I'm sorry, Mr. Walker. I'll have to call you back.
Don't bother, Major. I'll be over there by tomorrow night. The heat was rising off the asphalt-covered street as I drove through the small desert town of Lurac. I was hot, dirty, and tired after driving all night. There weren't any signs to show me the way to the Atomic Center, so I stopped for coffee and got all the directions I needed. 45 minutes later, I was in a small frame building, a kind of sentry post, waiting for Major Collins.
Sorry to keep you waiting, Mr. Walker.
Major Collins?
Yes. I had to stop inside to pick up your brother's personal file. Before we say anything else, I have a few questions I'd like to ask you.
You have questions to ask me?
Please, Mr. Walker, sit down and let me...
Well, what's that?
Just a routine test. Now then, according to this file, Harry Walker's nearest living relative is his brother, Todd Walker. What is your wife's maiden name, Mr. Walker?
Miller, Jean Miller.
The birth date of your son?
April 12th, 1941.
Your grandfather's birthplace?
England. I believe Ipswich. Not too sure. Now, look here, Major.
Just a few more, Mr. Walker. What was the name of the family that lived next door to you in 1933?
33, well, we lived in Adamsville then. Well, there was a girl. Her father was a minister. Don't remember their name, though.
What happened to a dog you owned called Spot?
Well, Spot was killed. He fell down a flight of cement stairs. I was only 10 years old when that happened. Now, Major Collins...
Here's your pass. Now, if you come with me, Mr. Walker, I'll tell you everything we know about the disappearance of your brother.
Before I had a chance to say anything else, before I could think of anything else to say, we were beyond the two sentry posts, through the great steel gate and inside the restricted area of the Atomic Center.
You aren't radioactive, are you, Mr. Walker?
What?
We're passing through a safety zone. If either of us is contaminated by radioactive materials, pitchblende, uranium, An alarm bell will sound. How's your son doing in school this year?
Bobby, oh, fine.
I read the last two letters you wrote to your brother. Sounds like you got quite a boy on your hands.
Yeah, he is.
Playing right field on a school baseball team, huh?
First base.
Oh, yes.
Still checking, Major?
Nobody ever died from being too careful. Now, this was your brother's room.
Why is it padlocked?
I didn't want any of his things disturbed. It is exactly as he left it.
When are you going to tell me what happened to him, Major?
Cigarette.
Thank you.
3 weeks ago today, at about 8 in the evening, your brother was seen to leave this room and enter the area outside. He appeared to be on his way to the mess hall for supper. He never arrived there.
Ready to go?
We don't know.
What?
All we do know is that about 50 yards from this building, he was accosted by a man wearing a heavy trench coat.
Trench coat in this heat?
He stopped and talked to this man. That's the last time he was seen.
Well, who was the man in the trench coat?
We haven't been able to identify him. Culver, one of your brother's friends here, saw them together. He heard the man call your brother by name, and he heard your brother mention the word target several times.
Target? This is just the way Harry left the room, huh?
Yes. Be careful about touching things, please.
Oh. There's your suits and shirts. Billfold. Wristwatch. All of his things are here.
Everything. Even his pass and identification papers. Everything but the clothes on his back.
What's this piece of rock here on the desk? Paperweight?
I suppose so.
It's heavier than it looks. Probably something he was working with.
I can arrange for you to take his personal things in a day or two, Mr. Walker.
Thanks. Well, you certainly can't suspect him of deserting.
We never did. To do that, he'd had to walk out of the camp. He didn't walk out.
Then?
There's only one possible way he could have gotten out of here.
How's that?
Up. Straight up.
We left the room soon after that and started down the stairs. Neither of us said very much as we walked slowly back to the little building at the front gate.
Are you going to stay in Lurac, Mr. Walker? Or do you plan to return to California?
I don't know yet.
When you know, I'd appreciate if you'd call me.
Yes, yes, I will. What's that?
Safety's on alarm. One of us is contaminated.
What?
One of us has radioactive dust on his clothes. Over here, please, quickly. All right, Mr. Walker. I'll step out into the zone first. Looks like you're it. Will you step out, please? Come on.
Radioactive, are you sure?
Certainly.
But how? I haven't touched anything except that paperweight.
I know, Mr. Walker.
I barely touched it.
You'd better spend the night here, Mr. Walker. By the time the boys in the decontamination room get through with you, it'll be quite late.
Thanks. Incidentally, I've made up my mind.
Yes?
I'm going to stay in Lurac. I'm going to find out what happened to Harry. Next morning, I drove back to town and called on a real estate agent. He knew of an adobe house for rent just off the highway, about 5 miles from the atomic center, and I took it sight unseen. The house was small but comfortable, and most important, it had a telephone. That evening, I called Jean.
Todd, it's good to hear your voice. When are you coming home?
I thought I'd stay here a while, Jean. Maybe you and Bobby could fly over.
Of course, when?
Tomorrow.
Wonderful, darling. Did you find out anything about Harry?
I'll tell you when you...
Todd?
When you get here.
Well, what's the house like, dear? Todd?
Something's happening here, Jean. Something I don't understand.
What?
Everything's turning green. The house, the room, everything.
Todd, what is it?
There's something out there in the desert, a green light.
Todd, are you...
Jean, listen to me. Hello. Phone's dead. That noise, that humming, what is it? Yes? What do you want?
Good evening, Mr. Walker. May I come in? Thank you. Is it always so cold here?
Cold? It's hot over 90.
Precisely.
You're cold, even with that coat on?
I have brought you a message, Mr. Walker. I was told to say happy birthday, Pappy.
Oh, Harry's alive.
Of course.
And you, who are you?
Forgive me. My name is Torgut. I come from the 10th planet.
We'll return for Act Two of The Tenth Planet, starring Mr. Joseph Cotton, in a moment. Mother, remember the days when you were a schoolgirl? And remember the sort of things you ate for your school lunches? Perhaps you'd say, why, I ate just about what I serve my own youngsters each day. Well, Mother, there's a big, important difference in bread today. Yes, it's a fairly safe bet. You're serving your children enriched bread. Bread enriched with wonderful, health-giving vitamins. And it's mighty important, Mother, that you serve your children plenty of enriched bread, not only for their school lunches, but for every other meal of the day. Children need the thiamine, the riboflavin, and the niacin contained in enriched bread. Those vitamins are necessary elements children need to give them good, healthy appetites. Elements to help keep them bright and alert all day long. And they also need the iron, which is added to enriched bread, to help them build good red blood. Maybe you think of bread as just one food. Well, bread is more than that. It's lots of good foods in one. Yes, there's flour and milk, sugar and shortening, and yeast and salt. They contain protein, calcium, and calories. Then when the bakers add precious vitamins and minerals, well, you can see why bread is known as our most important food. And that's why we say bread supplies lots of food for so very little cost. So, Mother, help keep your children healthy and happy. Serve enriched bread at each meal every day. And next time you visit your food store, look for the word enriched on the wrapper of the bread you buy. And now, Act Two of The Tenth Planet, starring Mr. Joseph Cotton.
My heart was pounding like a voodoo drum. I didn't want to believe what I'd heard. Talk of flying saucers, spaceships, interplanetary travel, this wasn't for me. I was a professor of mathematics, a logical man. And yet, there I was in a rented adobe house in the middle of the desert talking to a man who had calmly announced in a manner that made me believe him that he came from an unknown planet somewhere in the Earth's solar system. The tenth planet.
In talking to Earthmen, I find that to be the most simple designation.
But there are only nine planets in our solar system.
You are mistaken.
But the scientists...
are mistaken.
I see. You say you've seen my brother recently.
Yes.
Where is he?
With us.
He's all right? Unharmed?
In perfect physical condition and very happy. In fact, only one thing could make him happier.
Yes?
Sit down, Mr. Walker. My time is limited and I have much to say.
For the next 2 hours, I listened to the most fantastic narrative I had ever heard in my life. It defied logic, reason, and at the same time seemed to explain the flying saucers, the green fireballs, and the disappearances of so many men during the past few years.
Industrialists, artists, jurists, writers, scientists are but a few.
But why? Why are you doing this?
So that someday these men will be able to rebuild what is left of Earth.
Rebuild Earth?
Your experiments into atomic research, juvenile as they are dangerous. You are children playing with matches that could ignite the universe. We cannot let that happen. Therefore, the time is near for us to conquer Earth. You have seen our raypars.
Raypars? Oh, I never heard.
Oh, I believe you call them flying saucers. Most amusing. These are scouting craft. Soon we shall land in force.
When?
Before I may answer that, Mr. Walker, I must know whether or not you intend to join us.
Oh, I see.
I realize you will want time to consider this proposal.
Yes, I guess I will.
I am authorized to give you 3 days, Earth time. In 72 of your hours exactly, I shall return.
Suppose my answer is no.
Then you shall stay here on Earth.
But I could warn them. Warn all the nations on Earth. Make them stop production of atomic weapons.
Warn them? Do you think they would believe you, Mr. Walker?
All right, Todd. Do you want to tell me now about Harry?
Harry's safe. He's fine.
Well, that's a relief. You hadn't mentioned him all day, so I thought... Well, Todd, where is he?
On the 10th planet.
Oh, darling, stop joking. I'm serious.
So am I. Deadly serious. Jean, listen to me. Listen. And remember that I've never been more serious about anything in my life.
Good evening, Mr. Walker.
Oh, Major Collins. Come in, sir.
Sorry to disturb you at this time of night, Mr. Walker, but we've been very busy at the research center, and I didn't want to think I'd forgotten about you.
Well, it's kind of you to take such an interest, Major, but to be honest, I don't think we'll be around much longer.
Oh? Have you had some word from your brother, Harry?
No, not exactly, but... Well, under the circumstances, there doesn't seem to be much point in staying here. I'm sure you people do everything you can to find him.
Mr. Walker... Are you sure you haven't heard from your brother?
I have neither seen nor talked to my brother.
I ask if you've heard from him.
Yes, I have heard of
him. Mr. Walker, as a citizen, it's your duty to turn any information you may have over to me.
You wouldn't believe my information, Major.
Well, suppose you let me be the judge of that.
All right. I've received a message from Harry.
Where is he?
On the 10th planet.
What?
He is on the 10th planet.
Mr. Walker, this is no time to...
I'm perfectly serious, Major. I told you you wouldn't believe me.
I see. And that's all you have to tell me?
One thing more. The inhabitants of that planet are going to conquer this Earth.
With rocket ships and ray guns, I presume. Mr. Walker, I'll ask you once more. Where is your brother?
I've told you.
You leave me no choice, Mr. Walker. I shall have to report the fact that you are withholding vital information. Good night.
Shortly after 10, we heard it. And again, the desert and the room, everything turned that strange metallic green.
Todd, I'm scared.
No, baby, it's all right. This is just how it was the other night.
How long before he'll come to the house?
Any minute now.
I don't like this.
It's funny. He should have been here by now.
Maybe something's happened. Todd, maybe they're going to kill us.
No. Don't talk like that. I'll take a look out here.
Todd, don't leave me.
Yeah, stay with Bobby. I'll be right back.
Todd!
Good evening, Mr. Sure. Walker.
Target. We've been waiting inside for you.
Yes, I know. Have you reached your decision, Mr. Walker?
Yes, we have. We're going to go with you.
We?
My wife and son. We're all packed.
I'm afraid you misunderstood my original proposal, Mr. Walker.
What?
My offer to you did not include your wife and son.
It took me only a second to realize what this meant, and then I turned and ran as fast as I could. Suddenly, in that moment, I was a man of Earth with a wife and child, and I had no intention of leaving them. Jean.
Yes, dear, what?
Get your things, hurry. We're getting out
Todd,
of here.
Todd, what is it?
I'll tell you later. Now, get the car started, and I'll get Bobby.
But what about...
Please,
what
Jean.
What is it, Pop?
We're going home, son, back to California. Come on, here we go.
I don't think I'd like it on another planet. I'd like it right here. This other planet, I'd scare me.
I'll drive, Jean.
Where are we going?
I'm going to drive back to the atomic center. back through the rearview mirror and breathed easier. The night was moonlit, pure golden moonlight. It wasn't green anymore, and when we reached the highway, I was sure we'd make it.
Darling, what is it?
I don't know. Gas is all right. Yeah, check my jacket. I'm going to look under the hood. Ignition's okay. It's not flooded. Gene, I don't see a thing wrong.
What should we do?
There's a gas station about a half a mile down the road. You stay here with Bobby.
Todd!
I won't be gone over 20 minutes. What is this? Oh, no. Green. Everything's turning green. The Raypaw, they're coming after me. I've got to get away.
Mr. Walker, why exert yourself?
Target.
You cannot escape us.
I'll get away. I've got to get away. I've got to make it. I've got to make it. No! No, Gene! Gene! Positive that Earth as we know it is doomed. There's only one slim chance. If Major Collins were to have the radioactive rock we found in my brother's room analyzed, he would find that it is not of our planet. Perhaps then he would realize I was telling the truth. Otherwise, it's only a matter of time. They know our weakness and our strength, and they will conquer and rule the Earth. It's only a matter of time.
Thanks, Joe. And if my voice seems a bit shaky, it's because you've given us something to think about.
Wendell, I really don't think there's a word of truth in this flying saucer business. The other day, I read a statement by a man who runs an airline. He said that 20% of his pilots had never even seen a flying saucer. Oh, by the way, my thanks to Joan Banks and Richard Beale, Ben Wright, Peter Leeds, and Hans Conried, whose performance, you might say, was out of this world.
Thanks again, Joe. We'll hear about next week's Hollywood Star Playhouse right after our Bakers of America home economist, Miss Helen Reed, tells you about a dessert idea for your school lunches. Miss Reed?
Thank you, Mr. Niles. A school lunch may be a light lunch, as against an evening meal where you serve several different dishes. But still, a school lunch should be balanced nutritionally. That's why a dessert for lunch is just as essential as for a bigger, heavier meal. And what could be simpler for you to serve or more enjoyable and tasty for your children than cupcakes? Now, you can get either the frosted devil's food cupcakes or the frosted white cupcakes in the bakery department of your food store. You'll find them all neatly wrapped to keep them fresh for several days. And each package usually contains two or perhaps three generous-sized cupcakes. You might get several packages next time you shop for food. And if your children carry their lunch to school, you'll find cupcakes fit into a lunchbox very nicely. Of course, cupcakes make an ideal after-school snack along with a tall, cold glass of milk. Cupcakes are delicious. They're wholesome, and they add extra energy school children need. You'll find they're very economical, too. When you visit your food store, visit the bakery department. Find out what a wonderful variety of ready-to-serve desserts the Bakers of America prepare for you, fresh and delicious, each day.
Thank you, Miss Reed. And now here's a word about next week's Hollywood Star Playhouse. It's a story called The Reluctant Witness, starring Dennis O'Keefe.
Every detail of that horrible accident etched itself on my memory. I was determined that I would never allow myself to be called as a witness. And later, when I found it wasn't an accident, but murder, then it was too late.
Joseph Cotton can currently be seen in the Universal International Technicolor production, Untamed Frontier. Tonight's transcribed story was written for Mr. Cotton by Charlie Smith and Ralph Rose. The entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any similarity to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. This is Wendell Niles speaking for the Bakers of America, with an invitation to be with us again next Sunday for Hollywood Star Playhouse. Enjoy another half hour of fine dramatic entertainment brought to you direct from Hollywood by the Bakers of America, who are helping you serve better meals through bakery foods.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
From September 7th, 1952, the Hollywood Star Playhouse and the 10th Planet. We've come to the final 30 minutes of our podcast for this week, and we're going to feature Hollywood Star Time now. The program's titled It's a Date, from January 10th of 1947.
You're twice as sure with two great names, Frigidaire and General Motors. Frigidaire presents Hollywood Star Time, direct from Hollywood. Tonight, the radio production of the lilting and vivacious motion picture comedy, It's a Date, starring Vanessa Brown, Mary Astor, and your Saturday evening host, Herbert Marshall.
Good evening. Tonight, the accent is entirely on you, as Frigidaire brings you It's a Date. Young, in fact, is our main character, Pamela Drake, played by the refreshing Vanessa Brown. Young in heart are Georgia Drake and John Aron, played by Mary Astor and myself. Tonight's play is a delightful comedy, a surprising conflict for a comedy, and a load of heart and a load of good sense to temper its agreeable nonsense. In a brief moment, then, our sparkling play. During that brief moment, here's Wendell Niles for Frigidaire.
You're twice as sure with two great names, Frigidaire and General Motors. For Frigidaire is made only by General Motors. And it is this association of experience, of skill with skill, that makes Frigidaire America's favorite refrigerator. Remember this when you choose your new refrigerator. Remember that millions of Frigidaires in millions of American kitchens have established Frigidaire's reputation for complete dependability, for lasting satisfaction. Yes, you're twice as sure with two great names. For Frigidaire is made only by General Motors. No other company can make a Frigidaire. Now, Mary Astor, Herbert Marshall, and Vanessa Brown in It's a Date.
Well, I was just minding my own business, that's all. I got tired of the crowded dining saloon on board the big liner. You see, I was on my way to join Mother in Honolulu, and I had the most exciting news for her. I was going to be in my first Broadway play. A play produced by Sidney Simpson, no less. I, Pamela Drake, daughter of Georgia Drake, the Broadway star, was going to be a star in my own right. So I went up on deck alone. And in the moonlight, I rehearsed my lines in St. Anne. The love scene in Act One. I gave the lines everything I had.
Gerald, how long ago did we love? Was it 100, 1,000 years ago?
Hey,
or is our love measured in eternity? Answer me, Gerald.
Hey!
Gerald, who's that?
Over here. Number 4 lifeboat.
I need help.
Oh. Are you a stowaway?
I've been hiding in this lifeboat for 2 days.
Oh, dear, you must be hungry.
And thirsty. Especially thirsty.
Poor man.
Yes.
You stay right here in this lifeboat. I'll bring you something.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Scotch and soda with a twist of lemon peel.
You leave it to me. I'll take care of you as well as far as Honolulu.
Angel,
angel of mercy and kindness. Bless you.
Well, Johnny, my boy, I thought I'd seen all the ways of catching a woman, but that lifeboat stowaway routine of yours is...
Now, look here, Captain Andrews. I'm not trying to catch that 18-year-old child. You were worried about her. She was behaving like a lovesick and deeply unhappy girl out there in the moonlight, and you asked me to do something about it.
All right, don't get peeved, Johnny. I just didn't want any disappointed young women jumping off my ship.
Okay, I went out there in my unique fashion. I tried to give her an interest in remaining on board. But that's all over now. I'm not crawling back into that lifeboat again.
Oh, but you've got to.
My beard is sticking me to death. My shirt is crawling, and I'm sick of eating pineapple 3 times a day. And now she has the idea of sneaking me off in the boat in her clothes.
That I gotta see.
You never will. I'll go back tonight for my evening feeding. But when the girl shows up, I demand that you come around and discover me.
Quitter.
Here's your dinner, John. And don't be discouraged. I figured out another way for you to get off the ship when we dock.
I know. Disguise as a crate of pineapples.
How did you know?
They're coming out of my ears.
Well, anyway, here's my plan. When we put in at Honolulu... Oh, dear, someone's coming.
Captain.
Get under the cabin and lie still. I'll get it.
Yes, no.
Oh, quiet. Oh, good evening, Captain.
Good evening, miss. Lifeboat inspection.
Lifeboat inspection? Captain, look up there. Isn't that a submarine periscope I see?
Well, even if it is, I believe we are at peace, miss.
Oh, yes, to be sure.
Now then, let's have a look under this canvas.
Well, Captain, could you tell me where the beauty salon is?
Yes, at the foot of that companionway, miss. Now then, let's see.
Captain, Captain, I think I'm going to faint.
Be careful, keep away from that rail.
Captain, I'm falling.
Great Scott!
Help!
Great Scott, John, come out of that boat. Reverse engine!
Captain, what's happened?
Man overboard! Our damsel in distress jumped overboard.
What?
Full speed astern, man overboard!
Andy, I'm going after her. Out of the way, Captain!
Put on a life belt, you knucklehead!
Forget it, here we go!
All right, folks, stand aside, please. Here they come, up the ladder. Here you are, my girl. Grab my hand.
Thank you, Captain. Oh, fine. Thank you.
Good girl. Now, here's a hand, Johnny, my boy.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks a lot.
Good boy, Johnny, my lad. Here, wrap this blanket around yourself.
Johnny, my lad. You know each other that well?
Oh, friends for years. As a matter of... Oh.
Then why was John afraid you'd find him in the lifeboat? Unless...
No.
Well, of course it was... It was all part of an elaborate flirtation.
Well, to tell you the truth, miss, he is very fond of you.
Nonsense.
You step out of my way.
No, listen.
Out of my way?
Look out, don't push me.
Catch him, somebody! Man overboard! And save that blanket on him! It's pure wool! Have another brandy, Johnny?
Thanks.
You need it after those 2 plunges into the Pacific Ocean.
Look, Captain. Andy, what was the idea of telling that mere child that I was very fond of her?
My responsibility, Johnny. I don't want ladies jumping off my ship simply because they feel nobody loves them.
Decent of you. But I, for one, will be glad when this ill-starred voyage is over. Fill up my glass again. I'm all nerves.
Gerald, you borrowed one small portion of my love, but only borrowed it. Now I want it back. I'll never love again, Gerald. Never, never, never. Come in. My bags are all ready to go.
All ashore, the door is yours.
All right. Mother!
Baby, my little girl, how are you, Pamela, darling?
Oh, I'm fine, Mother.
Oh.
Oh, you're looking simply wonderful.
I feel wonderful, and I'm so glad you decided to spend your vacation with me in Honolulu.
And how's Sarah, Mother?
Oh, same old tyrant of my dressing room, as always.
Same old Sarah.
Oh, I've missed you so much.
I've missed you, Mommy, especially lately.
Well, I'm glad my little girl still needs me. I don't want to lose you yet.
You almost did lose me on this very boat to a man.
Pamela, not a shipboard romance.
Not quite. But I could have fallen in love with him in a minute.
Only?
Didn't have a minute to spare. Listen, I've been setting apart for a play I'm going to be in. And I'm Broadway.
Pamela, no.
Yes, isn't it wonderful?
Oh.
You're not going to be the only Broadway star in this tight little family.
Darling, I'm stunned. I'm delighted. Who wrote it? Who produced it?
I can't tell anyone. Not even you.
Well, never mind. I have my own new play to think about.
Oh. Is it good?
No, Pamela. This one is great. I've been studying like mad. Look at this. Nobody owns you, Jeremy. And I've scarcely owned myself. You borrowed one small portion of my love.
Mother.
I'll never love again, Gerald. Never, never, never. And stuff and stuff and stuff. Oh, it's wonderful.
Is that the thing?
Mm-hmm. Sidney Simpson gave me the script before I left New York 2 months ago.
Sidney Simpson.
This is really a great part. Something I can be identified with forever.
Sounds very exciting, Mother. Very.
Oh, it is, Pam. It's... Pam, aren't you well?
Oh, yes, yes, Mother. I'm just tired, I guess.
Of course you are. Let's get off this ship and back to my hotel, and while you rest and freshen up, I'll tell you all about my new play, huh?
Yes, Mother.
So much, Pamela, for the second act curtain. But do you notice the beautiful construction of the play, that... the almost classic quality. I love it.
I do too, Mother.
All right, now, Act 3, a year later.
Oh.
Oh, let it go. Sarah can take it to the next room.
Sarah went out a while ago. I'll get it. Hello?
We have a cablegram here for Miss Drake.
Miss Drake? Which Miss? This is Miss Drake.
A cablegram from New York City, signed Sidney Simpson.
Oh.
The message reads, just learned your daughter Pamela is on her way to visit. Telephone to 8 o'clock tonight, your time, to explain about the play. All my love, signed, Sidney Simpson. Shall I repeat the message?
Thank you, no.
Shall I send it over?
Oh, no, thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
But, John, I said goodbye. John!
Oh, is it that man from the boat? Buzz him off, Pamela.
Oh, very well, John. Dinner at 7:30, then. Thank you so much. Oh, yes, Mother will certainly be there. Bye.
I will certainly be where, Pamela.
That was John Arlen, the man from the boat, as you say. He wants to meet you at dinner.
Now, Pamela, it can't be that serious. Invite the boy to lunch sometime, but not dinner.
He insists on dinner. And he's not a boy, Mother.
Well, how old is he?
Oh, I'd say around 40.
40? My dear child.
I'm not a child.
Well, a man of 40.
A man of 40 deserves some consideration as an adult human being. John expects to have dinner with us tonight at 7:30.
Oh, Pamela.
Look, he's in this very hotel, which makes it not only rude, but almost impossible to refuse him.
Oh, all right. I'd better start getting dressed if we're to dine with your lovesick gentleman. Send Sarah into my room when she comes in, will you, dear?
Yes, Mother, I will. Operator. Operator, will you please connect me with Mr. John Arlen's room? Oh, I've started something. Now I've got to finish it.
Hello?
John, this is Pamela.
How nice. Who?
Pamela. Pamela Drake, the boat.
Oh, yes, of course, yes, Pamela. How are you?
Look, will you take my mother and me to dinner this evening?
Haven't you got anything to eat?
I'm expecting a very important call from New York at 8 o'clock tonight, and Mother mustn't be here when it comes.
I see.
Will you do it?
Well, I...
Oh, thank you, John.
Oh, quite all right, my dear.
7:30.
It's a date.
Oh, thank you so much. Goodbye, John.
Bye, Pamela.
Now... Well, so far, so good. What a wonderful play or a movie this would make. If it weren't so serious.
In just a moment, we continue with Act Two of It's a Date, starring Mary Astor, Herbert Marshall, and Vanessa Brown. Did you ever say to yourself, if there were only some way to take the guesswork out of cooking, then you're just the kind of person Frigidaire engineers had in mind when they designed the Frigidaire electric range. They were thinking of you when they gave definite cooking heats to the surface cooking units. Engineered Frigidaire's radium tube units, so you never have to guess at the heat you're using. They had you in mind when they planned the big Frigidaire oven, made it so even heating that things are sure to come out perfectly done and no guesswork about it. Frigidaire engineers were thinking of you when they gave this oven a temperature control that regulates its heat exactly and automatically. And consider the Frigidaire Cookmaster, the automatic control you set to turn the oven on at a certain time all by itself and to turn it off when the cooking time is up. No guesswork there. Everything is timed to the minute. Remember these examples of how Frigidaire engineers designed an electric range to help you take the guesswork out of cooking. Remember them as evidence of all the other advantages you'll find in the Frigidaire electric range. And remember, you're twice as sure with two great names. For Frigidaire is made only by General Motors. Hollywood Star Time continues with Act Two of It's a Date, starring Mary Astor, Herbert Marshall, and Vanessa Brown. Vanessa Brown appears by arrangement with 20th Century Fox, currently releasing Daryl F. Zanuck's production, The Razor's Edge. Music for Hollywood Star Time is composed and conducted by Johnny Green. Now, Act Two of It's a Date.
Dinner with Pamela and her mother was a revelation and a delightful shock. I was quite unprepared for the poised and charming and beautiful woman Pamela presented as her mother. Georgia Drake, the famous Broadway actress. I'd seen and worshipped her a dozen times. Sometime around 8 o'clock, Pamela excused herself on some pretext. I knew she had gone to her apartment to receive that important telephone call.
Hello?
The office calling, Miss Georgia Drake.
This is Miss Drake.
One moment. Go ahead, New York.
Hello, Georgia.
This isn't Georgia, Sydney. It's Pamela.
Pamela? I want to speak to Georgia.
I don't want you to speak to Georgia.
Oh, but look, my dear, I must...
Sydney, I won't play St. Anne for you.
You've got to play St. Anne, Pamela.
That's Mother's play. You promised it to her before you gave it to me, and she loves it. And, Sydney, she's going to do it.
But she's wrong for it, Pamela. I didn't realize it until the author pointed it out to me. It takes a younger woman. It takes you.
Mother is young. You don't know how lovely she looks, Sydney. She's going to do that play.
Pamela, Pamela, don't say anything to her, will you? I'm coming out there. I'll arrive in a week. Let me explain everything to her.
It won't make any difference. I still insist.
Fine, fine. That's the idea. See you in a week. Bye.
Sydney! Oh!
You'll be very good at St. Anne, Pamela.
Sarah!
I couldn't help overhearing.
Well, I'm not sure I like the part anyhow.
You like it.
Anyhow, there are more important things in life than the stage.
Like what?
Well, I've met a man.
So that 40-year-old man on the boat?
He loves me, and I'm rather fond of him. Hmm. And Sarah, don't tell Mother about the play. She wants to do the part so much, and if she does play it, won't it be better if she never knows they asked me?
Yes, I suppose so.
Promise you won't tell Mother? Promise.
I promise.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you.
Oh, John, you're priceless.
Nonsense, Georgia. Every man has his price. Now, what are you laughing at?
You. First one friend sends you a message that he's broken his leg, and you ignore it. Then the waiter tells you that your brother just shot himself. No reaction. Just now the manager tells you that your house is on fire.
Well, it is. I did it for the insurance. Oh, have a heart, lady. How did I know you'd turn out to be Georgia Drake? And so completely enchanting.
Well, the fact remains you sent those native runners to drag you away from Pamela's fat, stupid, talkative mother.
Hello, you two merry people. Well, can anyone get into this?
Pamela, where have you been? Sit down, dear.
Well, what do you think of this man, Mother? Loads of charm.
Oh,
eh?
I'm sure. Yes.
And handyman to have around the house, too.
Put up screens, things like that. Why?
Don't look so positively trapped, John. Nothing's happened to you.
What?
Yet.
What?
Never mind, dear. Aren't you going to ask to dance with me?
Have a nice evening, Georgia.
Oh, yes, Sarah. I can't remember the last time I danced.
Mother was positively beaming all evening.
Your mother works too hard and dances too little.
That's my choice, Sarah.
Oh, nonsense. You're still a young woman. You ought to be getting a lot more out of life than you do. More dancing, more pleasant dinners with pleasant men.
Sounds attractive the way you tell it.
Then why don't you give up the stage for a while and have some fun?
What? And give up that wonderful part in St. Anne? Well?
No, Mother. It's the finest part you've ever had, and you'll be wonderful in it. If I were going to act, I'd give anything to be in such a play.
If you were going to act, but I thought...
I've been thinking of giving up the theater.
Oh, Pamela, no.
John loves me, and I'm rather fond of him, Mother.
Oh, he's twice your age.
Yes, but I'm old for my years.
You're practically a hag, Pamela.
Sarah.
I'm sure I could make him very happy. And my entire relationship with men has been very adult.
What relationship? Skipping rope?
Sarah, you're the youngest of all of us. Really, you are. I'm tired. I'm going to bed.
You forgot your raggedy dolly.
Good night.
Oh. John Arlen is more than twice her age. Sarah, I don't understand it. I don't understand it.
No? I guess you don't. Oh, Mr. Arlen. Well, come in, please.
Thank you, Sarah. Where's Miss Drake?
Which one?
I don't know, Sarah. Where are they now?
In the other room, playing a scene from St. Anne.
She's great, isn't she?
Which one?
Both of them.
This is where I came in.
Sarah, I'm desperate.
Have you got a desperate brother?
I've known the Drake women for a week now, and I've never proposed to a woman before, you know.
That's curious. Neither have I.
Tell me, what do you do?
Well, that depends on whom you're proposing to.
I've been considering writing it out and mailing it with a stamped self-addressed envelope.
Yes, women appreciate those niceties.
No, that's cowardly.
If you'd give me just a teeny-weeny hint...
Sarah, I was thinking maybe I'd take Pamela for a drive tonight.
Oh, Pamela.
Yes, why?
Nothing.
I could ask Pam... I'd say, Pam, would you be good enough to ask your mother if she'd like to marry me?
What?
Well, how would that be?
Well, that would be great.
Do you really think so?
No, but I like your attitude. I like you. You're big and you're cute and distinguished, and I like you.
Well, thanks.
Doggone it, I like you.
Well, will you marry me?
I don't like you that much, but Georgia does.
Well, how do I find out?
Ask her. Invite her to the governor's ball tomorrow night and ask her.
I'd have to invite Pamela, too.
Well, all right, invite Pamela, too, but ask Georgia. I like you. Now, I'll go in the other room and announce you.
Yeah, leave it to them. But, Sarah...
Yes?
Don't let go of my hand.
Love to go riding like this, but why did you take me away from the ball?
Well, you see, Georgia, I wanted to. Point is,
take a deep breath and begin over again, John.
Oh, I'd better stop the car. Georgia, there's something I want to ask you.
Yes, John.
It's about Pamela.
Oh.
You see, for years I've watched my friends getting married, but nothing ever seemed to happen to me. I began to think, well, I'm. Just not the type ever to go overboard. I was wrong.
Were you, John?
Yes, George. I'm so in love I can't see straight. I don't know what else I can tell you, Georgia.
Well, John, I appreciate your asking me, but
Pam is still very young, really, don't you think?
This will be the best thing for her, Georgia. She'll have a man's protection and guidance and understanding.
There's something in that, I suppose, still.
It hurts my pride like everything to have to put things on this basis, but if you want me just as a father for Pam, that suits me fine.
Say that again.
What I mean is, take me one way or the other, but please take me.
John, you mean you want me?
It's no use, I suppose.
Oh, yes, John, yes, yes, all the use in the world.
You will marry me?
Oh, darling, of course I'll marry you.
Oh.
Oh. And I thought you were in love with Pamela.
Oh, no.
Wait, John.
No, you can't change your mind. You made a verbal contract just now.
Well, it's Pamela. Pamela's in love with you.
Oh, no, she's not.
She'd be dreadfully hurt.
She isn't in love with me, Georgia. I'll explain everything to her.
When?
Now, tonight. We'll drive back to the governor's ball right now and tell her. She won't mind, you'll see. Come on, Georgia. Pamela must be in the palm room.
Wait a minute, John. Wait a minute.
Huh?
Isn't that Sidney Simpson over there?
Oh, darling, I wouldn't know the gentleman.
My producer. Yes, it is Sidney. Sidney! Sidney Simpson, for heaven's
Georgia,
sake.
Georgia, how are you? Why are you looking grand?
What are you doing in Honolulu anyway? I thought... Oh, Sidney, I'd like you to meet Mr. John Arlen.
Well, hello, Arlen.
We've just been engaged.
Well, hello there. Congratulations, Arlen.
Thank you.
I know you'll be very happy, Georgia. This is splendid. Great.
Thanks, Sidney, but I have some bad news, too.
You have bad news?
I'm not going to play St. Anne for you, Sidney.
You're not going to play St. Anne?
No, I'd like to take a little rest and quiet domesticity for a while. Oh, please try to understand.
Well, I...
Besides, I know someone who could play St. Anne as well as I could. Maybe better.
Oh? Who?
Pamela.
Pamela? No.
She's a fine actress, Sidney.
Heads up, kids. Here comes Pamela now.
Mother, John, wherever in the world have you two... Sidney Simpson.
Well, how are you, Pamela? Congratulations, you know.
Congratulations? What for?
Oh, Pamela.
Why, Johnny, you told them we were engaged before you even asked me.
Look, Pamela, listen.
Oh, and I accept you, John, heart and soul. Now kiss me.
Excuse me, but one or more of us is seriously insane. John is engaged to Georgia, yes or no?
What?
Yes, Pamela, you see...
Oh, no.
Now, please try to understand, Pamela. Oh. Georgia and I are more...
Oh, but I do understand. It was very clever of you to pretend you loved me because you had nothing better to do.
Pamela.
Amusing yourself, listening to the sound of your own voice, making a plaything, a puppet, a fool out of me.
Pamela, people are staring at
me. I want them to stare. I want them all to know what a fool I've been. I hope all of you here are greatly amused. Laugh at me. Laugh. Laugh. Laugh at me all you like.
Oh, now it's laugh, eh?
As for me, I don't need anyone. I'm happy the way I am. Alone. John, you borrowed one small portion of my love, but only borrowed it. Now I want it back.
I'll never love again, John. Never.
Huh?
It's all right, Pamela, cut. You'll play St. Anne.
Oh, I was good just now, wasn't I?
Pamela?
Laugh, laugh, laugh. Oh, Pam.
Pam, you wonderful, wonderful ham.
Thank you, Herbert Marshall, Mary Astor, and Vanessa Brown for your splendid performances in It's a Date. In a moment, Herbert Marshall will be back to tell you about next week's star and story. Mary Astor appeared tonight by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of the all-star Technicolor musical Till the Clouds Roll By, including Van Johnson, Frank Sinatra, Catherine Grayson, and Robert Walker. It's a Date was presented by Frigidaire through courtesy of Universal International Studios, now releasing The Wicked Lady, starring James Mason and Margaret Lockwood. Hollywood Star Time is presented each week with the best wishes of your Frigidaire dealer. We invite you to come in and learn about the famous line of Frigidaire electric refrigerators, electric ranges, electric water heaters, home freezers, and a wide variety of refrigerating and air conditioning equipment for homes, farms, stores, offices, and factories. Now, here again is your Frigidaire host, Herbert Marshall.
Wendell, once upon a time, there was an aspiring young composer of popular songs who wrote a song called June Moon. Now think of it, the pity and wastefulness of it all. Using June and Moon in one song title. What came of such a sinful waste as the makings of one of the most brilliant comedy successes on Broadway and of Hollywood star time? And Frigidaire has invited Mickey Rooney to star in our production of June Moon next Saturday. If you love laughter and hail hilarity, better do as our good Dr. Wendell Niles recommends. Quote,
listen next Saturday at this time when Frigidaire presents Mickey Rooney in June Moon. And your Saturday evening host,
as ever, Herbert Marshall.
End quote.
Good night, all.
Hollywood Star Time was directed by Jack Johnstone. Tonight's script was written by Milton Geiger. This is Wendell Niles speaking for Frigidaire, made only by General Motors. CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Our trip down memory lane has been concluded for this week, but we'll be back next week with more great old-time radio, so why don't you join us and be part of the fun? Until then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.